Welcome to A Physician's Guide to Retirement, the show where we explore what comes after the full schedule, the on-call nights, and the identity of being the doctor. For many physicians, retirement isn't a single decision. It's a transition. It can bring relief and freedom, but also unexpected questions. Who am I without the role? How do I stay connected to purpose and community? What happens to relationships, routines, and the sense of responsibility that shape decades of practice? Each episode will sit down with physicians who are stepping away from clinical work, some gradually, some all at once, to hear what the shift really looks like. We'll talk about the practical side of leaving medicine, the emotional side of letting go, and the opportunities that open up when your time is finally your own. From part-time work and volunteering to second careers, creative pursuits, mentorship, and learning to rest without guilt, this is an honest conversation about closing one chapter and building the next. Whether you're years away, counting down the months, or already retired and recalibrating, you're in the right place. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Imperato. Let's talk about the transition with purpose, with clarity, and with honesty. Welcome, everyone, to our next episode of A Physician's Guide to Retirement. I have with me a very prestigious guest, Tracy Kesey. Tracy is the President and Director of Business Development at HTA Insurance Services, a national agency for retirement healthcare. Tracy has been there since 1998, and she specializes in helping people find and get appropriate Medicare and long-term care access. Tracy, welcome. I can't read through all of your bio because it would take the entire podcast, but I'm very happy to have you on board. And I also have a recurring guest, Dr. Jim Junker, who is a retired radiologist with a very prestigious career as a chief medical officer. Jim, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having us today.
No, thank you for being here. So, Tracy, let me start with my little vignette about my experience with Medicare. And I'll start by saying that my experience with computers started in 1972 when I was programming mainframe computers using punch cards and Fortran as the programming language. So, you know, I figured after 50 plus years of working with computers, especially in radiation oncology, signing up for Medicare would be a breeze. However, it turned out to be far more difficult than I had anticipated. And in fact, I ran into a problem in that my wife's application, which was done at the same time, was somehow connected to mine. So whereas my application was approved in 3 months, my wife's was sort of hidden. And I'll just say that we did get some assistance from the Social Security Administration. They did forward it to our local office where we had some connections that eventually allowed her to get approved for Medicare as well. So the question, Tracy, is how do we do this a little bit more easily?
Well, unfortunately, you're not alone in your experience. This is not unique. We work with doctors, attorneys, engineers, very highly educated people that consider themselves to be very computer savvy, and they have problems with Medicare. To add insult to injury, Medicare comes with all these different programs, parts and pieces. Lots of people are sending you mail and material that says must enroll now, deadlines, penalties. So the anxiety tends to be high. And then going through the computer system itself through Social Security's webpage can sometimes be a challenge for many people. In fact, the most confusing part is just logging into Social Security's website sometimes with the multi-factor authentication that they require. So unfortunately, your experience is not alone. And that's exactly why we're here, to hold people's hands through the whole process and make sure that everything is done timely and they're ready to go with their health care when the time is right.
Let's start with, basic Medicare. So all the parts to it, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, all the letters of the alphabet. So the first thing is this Part A, and there's deadlines and and potential penalties. Could you just explain a little bit about like the Part A portion of it?
Sure. Part A is the inpatient part of Medicare. So I always think of A for admission. If you're admitted into the hospital, that typically falls under Medicare Part A. Medicare Part A typically does not have any cost for people. You can qualify as long as you or your spouse has paid at least 10 years of Medicare taxes. You qualify for Medicare Part A for free. And a lot of people hear that you're required to enroll in the free Part A when you turn 65, even if you're not retiring. And that may or may not be true, depending on your situation.
Well, what makes it true or not true?
So when it comes to Medicare Part A, you think of it this way. You hear about all these penalties and everything that you could get for not enrolling in the Medicare parts at the right timing. And think of what is a 20% penalty of $0. It's still $0, right? So although people tell you you have to enroll in Part A, that's not necessarily true. As long as you get it for free, you won't get a penalty later, especially if you're still working. But we do encourage many people to enroll in Part A when they turn 65 because it gets you established in the Medicare system. As you mentioned before, the whole IT side and the website side of it can be somewhat confusing. So getting that part out of the way and getting the Medicare number established will make the rest of the process when you go to retire later and actually come off of group health insurance and go into Medicare, it will make that process that much easier. Because the hardest part of the whole thing, like you said, your wife's was delayed, is getting that Medicare number established. After that, it's kind of all downhill and it gets a little bit easier.
All right. So then that brings us to the letter B. And do you have a clever mnemonic for that?
I don't. But if you think of A as inpatient, you could think of B as the opposite of that, which is outpatient. So everything from doctors and specialists, diagnostic testing, outpatient surgery, even things that you go to the hospital for, but you're not A admitted for, like hospital observation or emergency room treatment, all of that falls under B as the outpatient benefit. And B does have a cost to it. It has a cost for everybody. The only people that don't pay Medicare Part B are those that qualify for Medicaid, which is financial assistance for those that are of poverty level income. So most people are paying for Part B. And in fact, the Part B price is dependent on your income. So the more you make, the more you pay for Part B.
And that's what they call the IRMA?
IRMA, income rated monthly adjusted amount. And we know people earn a high income when they call our office and say, I hate IRMA.
Yeah, that came as a little bit of a shock when I was initially quoted a price of about $200. But then after IRMA kicked in, it went substantially higher than that.
That's correct. So you hit it right on the head. The base premium for 2026 for Part B is $202.90 per month. But in order to qualify for that rate, you have to, if you file your tax return as an individual, you have to earn less than $109,000 per year. If you file your tax return as a joint household, you and your spouse have to earn less than a combined $218,000 a year. From there, there's five steps up depending on your income. Each step gains close to an extra $100 in premium per month. So, for example, the highest income bracket is for individuals earning over $500,000 or couples earning over $750,000. They're going to pay about $500 more per month for their Part B than somebody in that standard income range.
So let's say you're retired, so technically you're not receiving income. However, you may have dividends or capital gains. Is that all taken into account as well?
It is. And a couple things to be mindful of when it comes to this income bracket is, number one, the best way to estimate what you're going to have to pay is look at your tax return at your adjusted gross income. That's not the exact number they use. They use modified adjusted gross income. when they calculate it, but that can't be found anywhere on your tax return. So AGI is the closest estimate, which does include some dividend income and things along those lines. But also, the interesting thing is, when they assess your income and your Medicare premium, they being Social Security, because that's who, where you enroll and that's who has all your income records on file, they actually look at your income from 2 years ago. So we find, as we're working with individuals that are getting ready to retire, they say, well, 2 years ago, I was in a much higher income bracket. But now that I'm retiring, it's going to step down a bit. So there are things that we can do. You're not stuck in that higher premium for life if your income is going to go down. Eventually, Medicare will figure it out. For example, they assess you now based on your income from 2 years ago when you first enroll. But every year in December, they do a reassessment and they look at your income from 2 years prior and they give you that new rate for January. So they'll figure out that your income's gone down, but 2 years in arrears, and they're not going to pay you back for those overpaid premiums you've paid for the last 2 years. So we spend a lot of time working with people. Once they enroll, we ask how they anticipate their income's going to change. And there's a form that could be filed if your income's going down to say, hey, I just retired or I just semi-retired and my work schedule's gone down. My income is anticipated to be at this new level and Medicare can adjust accordingly. And then 2 years from now, when they go back and reassess the income from this year, if you did end up making more than what you estimated, they'll balance bill you for what you should have paid. But again, if you made less than what you indicated, they're not going to pay you back for your overpayment. So it's always good to file those forms. And that's something that we often help people with.
With Medicare, there's certain time constraints when you have to, you know, apply, and there can be potential penalties involved if you don't apply in time. Could you just talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, when you turn about 64, and it seems to be getting earlier and earlier every year, but when you turn 64, you are going to start getting inundated, unfortunately, with spam mail and spam phone calls. And you can take yourself, put yourself on the do not call list. It still seems to come in for most people. And they're using those threats, deadlines, penalties, must enroll to get you to buy something, to get you to call an insurance agent so they can sell you a product. But really, it's a little less stressful than that. So here's the basic. If you are on a group health insurance plan that is provided by your current employer, or if you are on a group health insurance plan that is provided by your spouse's employer, and you are still working at that company, or your spouse is still working at that company, you don't have to do anything at 65. That group health insurance is considered credible coverage. So two things that you need to satisfy in order to not have to enroll in Medicare when you turn 65, you must have to have group insurance, and it must be based on or offered from yours or your spouse's current employer. So things that aren't going to be credible coverage are individual plans. So maybe you've retired early and you went on, you know, a marketplace plan, or you bought individual insurance on your own. That's individual. That's not group coverage. So it's not credible. But also, maybe you were offered a severance package, you went on COBRA, or you have a retiree healthcare plan from a previous employer. Those, in fact, are all group insurance, but they're not based on your current active employment. So they are not credible. So if you have individual coverage or group coverage that's not based on active employment, then you fall into that category of you must do something or deadlines and penalties will occur. And they give you kind of a 7-month window surrounding your 65th birthday to make that happen. But if you defer because you had credible coverage, we still have like an 8-month window once you come off of your credible coverage to get you into Medicare. So it's not quite as scary as it seems, but it's scary enough that you should get professional advice when you turn 65 just to make sure you're not doing anything wrong. Because if you are assessed to those penalties, They are assessed onto your premium and they stay with you for the rest of your life. So it's definitely a mistake you don't want to make.
Well, since we're talking about penalties, there's also something about when you go onto Medicare Part A, you are limited in HSAs. Is that correct?
That is correct. So remember I said you don't have to enroll in Part A. Everybody's going to tell you Part A is free. Get enrolled in that. But if you have credible coverage, you can defer the Part B, the part you pay for, which is true. But there is one situation where you do not want to enroll in Part A, and that is if you're going to continue working and you have a high deductible health plan with a health savings account. So I'm not talking about a flexible spending account or an HRA or anything like that. I'm talking a health savings account. That's where you can put money away tax-free for medical expenses. The government considers that, regardless of what we consider it to be, the government considers that first dollar benefits. The government considers Medicare as first dollar benefits. So even if you enroll in that free Part A, even if you're not going to use it because you're still on your group health plan, by virtue of enrolling in Part A, you have now disqualified yourself from making future deposits to your HSA account. So we typically, when we talk to somebody pre-age 65 and we talk to them about what they're going to do, enroll in Part A only, enroll in both, or do nothing, if they're on an HSA account and they want to continue making deposits and saving for retirement healthcare, then we recommend that they do not do anything until they're planning to retire later. One more caveat I just want to bring up to that is when you do enroll in Medicare later, so maybe you continued working to age 68, and now you're saying, okay, I'm going to drop my HSA, I'm going to enroll in Medicare. They are going to backdate that free Part A 6 months. So we always say if you're on an HSA, that means it's a special opportunity to make sure you're getting your advice before you turn 65 so you don't enroll in that Part A and mess things up. But it's also reason about 6 to 12 months for retirement to talk to somebody again to make sure that last year that you're in your HSA, you're not overfunding it based on the Medicare requirements. They do a prorated calculation and we can help with that, but it's just important to know.
So that brings up, well, a couple of good points, but the first one is, at what age should someone really start working with a company like you, with your, someone like you or your company like yours? Clearly, if you wait till 65, you may have missed some opportunities or you may have blown a few opportunities. Like, so when do you recommend people start? When they're 63, 64?
I would say if you're a planner, start getting education as soon as you're comfortable. We've had people call us at 55 and I said, well, this is great. I can tell you what's going on now, but you better believe it's going to change in the next 10 years. So I would say to be safe, 64 is the magic age. If you talk to somebody between age 64 and 64 and a half, that gives you plenty of time to make those decisions and understand what you need to do at age 65. And it also helps you set up that timeline for, okay, I'm going to continue working another couple years. When should we be taking action in the future? And we kind of put together a timeline for them to say, we're going to talk now, we're going to talk in 3 years, and then check in 6 months before you're ready to retire to actually start the process.
Now, we know that A and B, or maybe some people don't, A and B is not enough. That we also have C and D, which are the drug plan and the supplemental plan. Could you kind of touch on those?
Yeah, so that is as part of a bigger conversation that hopefully we can dive into as well. But so in order to have proper coverage in retirement, you're going to need four parts and pieces. Medicare A and B, as we mentioned, that's through the federal government and you enroll in through the Social Security Administration. But very generically speaking, that's only going to pay about 80% of your healthcare needs. And I think the biggest concern with Medicare is there's no cap. There's no maximum out of pocket on your risk. So you'd be paying 20% of the doctor office visit, not too much money, but you'll also be paying 20% of the hospital observation, which could be a $100,000 bill. And there you continue to pay that 20% forever with no top end limit if you were just to have Medicare A and B only. So we suggest adding Medicare Part C and D, as you mentioned. The C is secondary insurance for major medical, and that comes in two flavors, either Medicare Supplement, otherwise known as Medigap. So if you've heard the term Medicare Supplement or Medigap, as confusing as they make things, they give two separate words for exactly the same coverage. So Medicare Supplement, Medigap mean exactly the same thing. Or you can do Medicare Advantage, which is a lot of the stuff that you see advertised on TV. So C is the secondary insurance that goes with Medicare that helps pay your major medical. D, think of drugs for D, and D is the prescription drug benefit of Medicare, and it can come included with your major medical, or you can buy it separately. There's a lot of options there.
Okay, now, wanted to say, one of the things I did, because I tend to be a little bit paranoid when dealing with this stuff, is I have a slight overlap between the activation of my Medicare and and my actual retirement. There's a few months overlap. So during this time period, how, if I were to have a major medical issue, is Medicare still my primary, or is my corporate insurance my primary? And how does that work?
So typically speaking, like I said, if you have group health insurance and it's based on active employment, yours or your spouse's, you don't need Medicare. But like you said, you did it a little early, just being cautious, and you're still working. If your company that you're working for has more than 20 employees, your company insurance, as long as you're employed and enrolled in it, will remain primary. So Medicare A and or B is going to sit secondary to that. You're not really going to realize any coverage from Medicare because your group insurance probably pays most of your major medical expenses for you. But it's there. And when you're ready to come off the group insurance, we just have to do the C and D for you. But if you work for a smaller practice under 20 employees, once you turn 65, Medicare law says that Medicare becomes your primary insurance. So even if you continue working and you continue to stay on that group insurance, yes, it's credible. Technically, you don't need to enroll in Medicare. But for smaller companies, you'll need Medicare to pay in the primary payer position. So we always say, you know, most people work for those larger companies, 20 plus. So you have a little bit more flexibility there. But if you work for a smaller company, that's even more reason to talk to somebody at age 64 just to make sure you're not making any coverage mistakes.
Jim, just you've obviously been now on Medicare for a while. Did you encounter any issues when you were going for the various drug plans and issues with the different supplemental plans?
Not initially, Joe, but, you know, if you've been on Medicare for a while and you've had a Part D plan, you have to evaluate what your health will be in the next year. In October and November and part of December, I think, of the preceding year. So you make an educated guess. If your health changes in the next year, it can be, you could easily spend a couple of $1,000s on medicines that are not covered under the plan that you were originally on. So, and I bow to Tracy here, you really need to look at the Part D every year and assess what your prescription drugs, what prescription drugs you're going to need.
Yes, if I could comment on that for a moment. So first, I would like to just bring some clarity to that, what they call the annual enrollment period for Medicare. And as Dr. Junker mentioned, this is between October 15th and December 7th. You can't miss it because there's so many obnoxious commercials on TV telling you you need to make a decision. But a lot of people actually think that that is the only time of year you can enroll in Medicare, and that's simply not true. You can enroll in Medicare when you turn 65 or when you come off of your group health insurance. We'll give you a special enrollment period. So you don't have to worry about that time of year when you're initially getting into Medicare. But once you are already enrolled in Medicare, That annual enrollment period each year is when you can make plan changes specifically on the Part D, the drug program. And as Dr. Junker mentioned, we definitely want to pay attention to that every year because your drug needs may change. And if you're on a Medicare Advantage as your secondary insurance, that is the time of year you can change your Medicare Advantage plan as well.
You know, Tracy, one of the things that I think a lot of people find confusing is also what's called Medicare Advantage. And could you just explain what that means?
Absolutely. So think of the commercials you see on TV. You may see things like free dental, free vision, free gym memberships, all included in your healthcare plan. And guess what? The healthcare plan costs you nothing. When you see those commercials, they are in fact Medicare Advantage plans, not Medicare supplement plans. The way Medicare Advantage works is you enroll it through the federal government in your Medicare A and B. But as we know, the federal healthcare system has been getting taxed and they're worried about being able to afford things in the future. So they created this program called Medicare Advantage. And what happens is those premiums that you pay to the federal government get forwarded over to the Advantage company. Basically, Social Security pays the Advantage company to, quote unquote, manage your care. And now the Medicare Advantage company becomes your sole insurance. You still have to pay for the A and B, but you put that red, white, and blue Medicare card away in your drawer, and the Medicare Advantage plan becomes your primary insurance. So these are managed care plans that come with a lot of extras and freebies, which kind of make them attractive to many people. And the fact that it doesn't cost you any additional money over what you're paying to the federal government in many cases make that attractive to people.
In the interest of complete transparency, having, you know, I practiced for 33 years, but for the past 9 years, I've been working for an insurance company. So I have familiarity with managed care. I think that it's often very confusing to people when their doctor recommends test, for example, and then they find out that their insurance is not going to cover it. Do you want to address that? Because that does come up quite a bit.
Absolutely. So managed care is exactly how it sounds. I love that I'm on a podcast with people in the medical profession because you know this firsthand how this works. So managed care means it's not just you and your doctor making the medical decisions. It's you, your doctor, but with oversight of the insurance company who has approval or rejection of those medical decisions. And not only the decisions themselves, but, and you could probably speak better to this than I can, but what level of coverage or what provider you can see to get that procedure. So managed care is going to have pre-approvals, prior authorizations, and potentially some services are not going to be covered. In addition, because it's managed, the providers themselves have to decide, do they want to participate with this insurance company's rules? Do they like how this insurance company is going to treat their patients? If so, they participate with the insurance company. If not, they have a choice to not participate. So managed care plans, i.e. Medicare Advantage plans, are also network restricted plans as well. So you're going to have insurance company oversight, and you're going to have network restrictions. And the network restrictions in Medicare Advantage are not quite as robust as they are in under age 65 healthcare. We find that commercial insurance tends to have better reimbursement rates than Medicare Advantage plans do. So you'll find that the same insurance company might have a more robust network in your group health plan than that same insurance company in a Medicare Advantage plan would have.
So if you go, however, Medicare with a Medicare supplemental, do you not have some of these issues?
That's correct. So this is 100% why it's so important to get non-biased education before retirement or before you choose your Medicare plan. Because when you first go into Medicare, whether that be at age 65 or when you come off of your group health plan later, When you first go into Medicare, you have 6 months to make your initial decision on what you want to go with, Medicare Supplement or Medicare Advantage. Medicare Supplement is very different. What happens is it sits on top of your Medicare A and B. So you're still going to have the federal government Medicare A and B, the inpatient and outpatient, like I mentioned, that covers about 80% of your services or 80% of the cost of your services. And then you add the supplement over top, which typically pays the other 20% of the cost of your insurance. Since Medicare, federal government A and B, remains your primary insurance, you play by their rules. And their rules are very black and white. Everything's written down. Here are the services we cover. Doctors know right out of the gate what Medicare allows and what it doesn't allow. It's not a prior authorization, pre-approval. What's this insurance company going to say process? It's this service is covered, so we're going to get it for you. And then there's no doctor network restrictions as well. So you can use any doctor nationwide. You can get any second opinion you want nationwide as long as that provider participates with Medicare. 99% of providers, non-pediatricians, but 99% of other providers participate with Medicare. So full coverage nationwide, no managed care on the Medicare supplement side. I was just going to say there's, you know, a give and take, obviously. Medicare Advantage comes with all those freebies that I mentioned, and you typically don't have to pay any additional premium on top of what you pay for your Medicare Part B. Medicare Supplement, because it's additional coverage on top of Medicare A and B, there would be a premium, which ranges, depending on where you are in the United States and your age and gender, it ranges anywhere from an extra $100 a month to an extra $250 a month to get the supplement on top of your Medicare.
What about things like deductibles? Is there a difference between the two for deductibles as well?
Yes, they do, in fact, work very differently. So on the Medicare Advantage side, think of it as you pay very little to nothing for the insurance, but you're going to have a copay or a deductible for every service you receive. And think of it like a menu. All the services are listed, primary care, specialist, chiropractor, emergency room, everything's listed on a page, and it tells you what your corresponding fee is, provided you use the in-network providers of that plan. So everything's going to have a cost, and you're going to continue to pay those fees, and they may be nominal, like a primary care may be $10 to $30, a specialist maybe $30 to $50, hospital maybe $250 a day for so many days, stuff like that. But you continue to pay those fees until you reach the maximum out of pocket. And on many Medicare Advantage plans, that's between about $6,500 and $9,000 a year. So the more medical services you use, the higher out of pocket, therefore probably overshadowing a lot of the savings you're getting on the premium. On the Medicare supplement side, that's the opposite. You're paying for the insurance, $100 to $250 a month typically, but when you go to use it, there's little to no out-of-pocket expenses. Some of the plans, there's a couple different options, and they're all designated by letters too, just to keep it nice and confusing for you. The most popular option is a Plan G. I believe that's what Dr. Junker is on, if you don't mind me sharing that. Plan G is the most comprehensive option for people that are turning 65 right now. Basically, Plan G Medicare Supplement will pay all of your Medicare cost-sharing expenses. So if Medicare pays a portion, the Plan G picks up the balance of it, with one exception. The only thing Plan G does not pay for is your Medicare outpatient deductible. This year, that's $283. So you pay the first $283 of your outpatient care each calendar year. After that, between Medicare and a Plan G supplement, as well as other supplements that you can choose from, will pick up the balance. So your maximum out-of-pocket on a supplement, under $500 a year. Your maximum out-of-pocket on an Advantage could be between $6,500 and $9,000 a year if you're not healthy.
Okay, so it would seem to me, since, you know, us physicians are so clever, that if I am healthy when I'm signing up, that what I would do is I'd go with an Advantage plan, and then if something happens, I just switch over to the supplement. Is that something you can do?
That is, I hear that so often. You know, I just turned 65. I'm young. I'm healthy. I love the idea of free dental and vision and gym memberships because I am retired now. I'm going to start using the gym more. But I would like to go over to that supplement model without the restrictions once I get sick. So your question is asked by almost everybody. Unfortunately, I don't have a good answer for you. Because like I said, when you first go into Medicare, you have 6 months to make your decision. You choose supplement or Advantage. After that, if you want to get into a supplement plan, you would need to be medically underwritten, meaning they're going to ask you about 10 medical questions and high blood pressure, cholesterol, no big deal. But if you get a diagnosis that's somewhat significant, it's going to be very difficult to be underwritten for a Medicare supplement plan later. There are a few states, and I know we have a national audience, so I just wanted to mention there are a few states where it's not as restrictive. New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and there's one other.
Washington,
yes, thank you. So if you're in one of those four states, you would have a little bit more flexibility. But in any of the other states, if you don't choose supplement when you are in your first 6 months or while you are healthy enough to be underwritten, it will be very hard to get a supplement later.
And that's permanent. In other words, if you, let's say you get a diagnosis of, you know, congestive heart failure, that's going to follow you for life. And so that may essentially eliminate the option of supplement unless you're in one of those states.
In that example, definitely would. Now, there are other things that may not limit your option for life. For example, if you get a cancer diagnosis, you're treated, you're deemed cancer-free for a period of 2, 3, or 5 years, depending on the insurance company question, then maybe you can get it later. So sometimes we unfortunately have people that didn't do all of the research or didn't talk to an unbiased educator prior to when they first went on Medicare, and they'll call and say, I just got a cancer diagnosis. I realized, and here's the big copay under Medicare Advantage. It's chemotherapy and infusion drug treatment is typically a 20% copay. So a cancer diagnosis with the various treatments and some infusions is likely going to hit your maximum. So that's when people come to us and say, hey, I didn't know what I was getting into. I'd like to move over to supplement. And our answer is, okay, well, let's get through this treatment. Unfortunately, we can't change you now. But once you are cancer-free for a period of time, let's get you on that supplement. So if something happens again later, you'll have the more comprehensive coverage, the less restrictive coverage.
Well, Tracy, you've done a great job answering all these questions. And I can tell you, having gone through it myself, it is not an easy course to do on your own. So couple of questions. Number one, what does your company do to help Joe Average like me get all of this figured out? And how do we contact you?
Well, thank you for asking that. My passion is in educating. I always thought I wanted to be a college professor, but I found myself in the insurance industry at a very young age of 19. And so I made that work for me. So what I found was exactly the issue that you ran into. It's so much confusion, and people just need unbiased handholding to get through it. So that's how I designed our company. We have about 40 employees. We have a ton of Medicare advisors on staff, but they're all salaried. So their job is to educate you on the pre-retirement, when you need to go into Medicare, what those penalties are, how to avoid them. So we do a pre-retirement consultation with you to get you all set up. And then when it's time to take action, we will talk through the various programs, the Medicare supplement, the Medicare Advantage, the prescription drug plans, help you make your most appropriate decisions based on your budget and your medical needs. And then we help fill out that paperwork for you and get it into the insurance companies. After that, we provide ongoing support with claims handling and any questions that you have on coverage. But the best part is, like I said, all of our representatives are salaried employees. So you're never going to feel like you're being sold something. And we're always going to give you the big picture. So the way you can get a hold of us is the easiest thing probably is to visit our website. It's www.hta and then the hyphen or the dash symbol insurance.com. So again, that's www.hta-insurance.com. We have information on there about our services, and there's also a schedule button to go ahead and schedule that consultation. We even have widgets where you can walk through and say, here's my age, here's what my insurance looks like. What's better, my insurance now, or should I go into Medicare, or when do I need to go into Medicare? So we have some self-service tools, as well as the ability to schedule a one-on-one consultation. And our consultations don't cost you anything. We're paid by the insurance companies to do the work that we do. So we can offer the service to you at no cost.
Oh, that's fantastic. And does that continue? So in other words, once I sign up the first time, now I got to reevaluate whether I want to stay on the same supplemental or switch to a different supplemental. Will you guys still help with that as well?
Absolutely. We are available. The annual enrollment period at the end of the year is a crazy time for us, but we're available to answer questions. If you want to change a Medicare Advantage plan, if that's the side you're on, we can help with that. We reach out to you at your supplement renewal, offering to look around and see if there's better prices out there for you. And like I said, if you have any questions on claims, benefits, how something works, who can I see, what do I do? My staff is all ready to answer those questions.
Well, Tracy, you've been a font of knowledge. I deeply appreciate you taking the time to join us. Jim, do you have anything to add at this point?
Just briefly on the Advantage, do your homework first. Check on the network, both doctors and hospitals. The hospitals, you can go to Medicare.gov and evaluate their quality. You can go to LeapFrog and look at their safety ratings. Consider your lifestyle. If you travel a fair amount, will you be covered when you're out of town, when you might get ill? And this pre-authorization deal is not a minor consideration. I just read that Congress is considering mandating malpractice insurance for the physicians of the insurance companies that are making these medical decisions. They say they're practicing medicine without seeing the patient, and there should be some liability for them as well as the person who's directly responsible for that patient's care. That's all.
Yeah, that's a good point, and Jim. And I can tell you that most states now require the physicians doing utilization management to have a license, a medical license in that state for exactly that reason, because they consider it the practice of medicine. Well, with that, let me wrap up. Again, thank Jim for being here. And again, thank you, Tracy. For everybody that heard Tracy, I'll repeat again. You can reach her at hta-insurance.com. Having gone through it, like I said, I highly recommend looking into it, even if it's a little bit sooner than you think you're going to retire. You can't really start educating yourself early enough. But with that, thank you again, Tracy. Thank you, Jim. And thank you all for listening. And we'll see you at our next podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
As we wrap up today's episode, remember, retirement in medicine isn't just an ending. It's a handoff, a chance to step back from the pace of clinical life while carrying forward what matters most, your values, your relationships, and the parts of you that exist beyond the white coat. If this conversation resonated, share it with a colleague who's starting to think about what's next, and subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And if you have a story, a question, or a topic you'd like us to explore, send it our way. We'd love to include your voice. Until next time, take care of yourself the same way you always cared for others.